he busted. I circled my arms around Clancy's chest from behind, trying to get a good grip on him, and tearing off one of his coat's gold buttons in the process.
You are,
I gasped, feeling the stitches in my back pull. Officially, the biggest pain in my ass. I had to drop him to shove the desk out of the way again. I took one more step out, taking a deep breath to steady myself against the sight of Jarvin's and the other agents' bodies, but the hallway was empty. As I dragged him out into it, I had a thought, a brief one, of pulling him into the infirmary, but I could see figures moving in there behind the curtains, and I wasn't sure I was willing to take the bet it was someone from Cole's team. There were any number of doors along the hall, most of them leading into rooms I had never been allowed to see. But there was only one closet that was open, and the rack of guns in there had been picked clean, leaving enough room for a human body to be shoved in. I had just angled Clancy into the tight space when I heard my name shouted for the whole damn base to hear. I whipped around, searching for the source. Kate was suddenly there, rushing out of the infirmary, pulling the rifle strap off her shoulder. She ripped the black ski mask off her head and let it fall behind her. I was in her arms, in her warmth, before I had the sense to brace myself for the impact. A relief I didn't expect passed down through me as I leaned into her.
"What are you doing?"
she asked. And I was honestly still so shocked at her appearance, I actually told her the truth. "Locking Clancy Gray in a closet?" She pulled back sharply, looking down at the prone form at our feet. And Kate, for the first time in her life, didn't ask me if I wanted to talk about how I was feeling. I didn't need to explain why we couldn't leave him in the infirmary or in one of the rooms where he might escape. She knew what he was and what he was worth.
"Okay, I'll go get the keys."
"Kate," I said, catching her arm, "is it over?" She smiled. "It was over 10 minutes ago."
"Really?"
My voice was small in my own ears. I felt 5 years old, the way I had after getting lost in a mall and suddenly finding my dad's hand again after frantically searching for him. I knew it was stupid to cry, but exhaustion had brought me to the breaking point, and the sudden, unexpected release of fear and pain pushed me past it. Kate stepped toward me, taking my face between her hands. It was like staring into a full moon rising as it cut through the night.
"I knew you could do this."
I squeezed my eyes shut and a white tent bloomed behind my lids. There was Mason, taking his last breath, the smell of a stiff leather muzzle, Rob screaming, screaming, screaming. I wanted to tell her everything, to unload it on her and let her share the crushing weight of it. She had offered to so many times, and every single instance I'd shot her down, thrown it back in her face. Even now, I felt that same reluctance wrap around my chest, trying to protect the weak, beating muscle there.
"It was horrible," I whispered.
She smoothed a stray tear away from my cheek.
"And you were stronger."
I shook my head.
"I wasn't. I was..." How could I put it in a way she'd understand?
"That's not what Jude and Vida told me." I opened my eyes, searching her face for any sign of a lie.
"Are they okay?"
"They're fine," she promised. "Worried about you. I can take you up to them. But first, I think we need to take care of our little problem." She nodded toward Clancy. "All right?"
"Yeah,"
I said, taking a deep, shuddering breath.
"All right."
Cole and Kate's team had moved the kids into the atrium and shut the doors, blocking the steady flow of bodies that were being lifted out of the residence hall and brought down to the infirmary. They were the agents that overthrew Albin, all of them. A part of me thought it was ridiculous they were trying to keep us from seeing it. Another part of me felt grateful. I took a breath, shaking the tension out of my shoulders, then reached for the door. They'd pushed most of the tables to the outer edges of the room, leaving the center of the room open for cots. Some of the kids and agents were being treated by the medical staff for bumps and scrapes. It seemed insane that they were ignoring the fully stocked infirmary in favor of hauling gauze and antiseptic up here, until I remembered that same infirmary was currently functioning as a makeshift morgue.
"Are all of them dead?" I asked quietly.
In addition to the 20-odd League kids huddled at the center of the room, eating whatever it was they'd dug out of the kitchen store for breakfast, there were something like 40 agents ringing the perimeter of the room in clusters of black. But these were the faces that I had expected to see. Agents who were in charge of psi teams, instructors, the ones who looked at us with sad, longing eyes when they thought we weren't looking. "The ones who wouldn't stand down," Kate said carefully. "So, all of them."
"I know it must have felt like they were all against you, but there were a number of agents who were blindsided by Albin's assassination and only stayed because it was too late to get out without retribution from Jarvan. They didn't put up a fight when we swept the sleeping quarters and were free to leave if they didn't want a part of this."
My eyes didn't stop scanning the room until they'd found them all. Chubbs and Liam stood in front of one of the televisions, their backs to me as they watched news coverage of some kind of white-domed building. Jude and Vida were near them, crouched on the floor in front of Nico, who looked like he was making a real effort to curl up into a ball and disappear forever. Kate followed my gaze.
"We'll talk about that later."
"Talk about what?"
came the drawl behind us. I felt a heavy arm drop over my shoulder.
"Could it be about little old moi?"
I tried to tug myself free, but he held me there, ruffling my already disastrous hair. I couldn't keep myself from flinching when I smelled the smoke on him. Red. Sigh. Impossible. I rubbed the back of my hand against my forehead. He was so together. When Mason had been crumbling from the inside out. And it wasn't that Cole wasn't intimidating. He was. In a way that disarmed you and left you flustered. It was that every other Red I had come across at Thurmond acted like an animal that had been caged by his own skin. They refused to meet anyone's eyes, walking around with these vacant looks, listening to a voice in their mind, I think, that the rest of us couldn't hear. Every once in a while they'd come back to themselves, a hunger darkening their faces. You'd catch them staring at another kid, these little twisted smiles tucked into the corner of their mouths, and you knew what would come next. But Cole not only had kept himself in check, he'd flourished. Red. The two of them shared a look over my head.
"He mentioned that you've been trusted with a very important secret?"
I didn't say anything, not because I couldn't think of a response, but because I couldn't pick one out of the thousands of questions billowing through my mind. Finally, I turned to him and settled on, "How long have you known?"
"Since I was 12," he said. "Late bloomer, compared to the rest of you. Scared me shitless. Mom and Harry always thought I was sneaking in matches or lighters, burning things to act out. It's not the kind of thing you talk about if you don't want to get bussed to some god-awful camp, you know?"
"Why not tell Lee?" I asked. "Why keep it from him?" Cole's eyes narrowed.
"I have my reasons, none of which is your business. You gave me your word you wouldn't..."
"I won't," I said, hating him for it. Another thing to keep from him. Another lie. How is this even possible? You're too old. Are there more like you?" No wonder Alman had valued him. A Psi who could move among the adults, never detected, just because he missed the supposed age cutoff. Kate glanced around, making sure there were no prying ears nearby.
"Far, far, far fewer. A few hundred age outliers. But it's not the time to talk about it. We have bigger concerns right now."
"Speaking of which,"
Cole lowered his voice as he leaned down,
"you couldn't have mentioned Damsel in Distress number 2 was the president's kid?"
"Let's see how many words you can get out after having your brain scrambled."
fair.
He glanced at Kate.
Is he going to be a problem?
He's in closet B2, she said, raising her brows in what looked to me like a challenge.
Okay, okay, he said. This first, that later. There weren't any guns left in there, right?
I don't know who looked more irritated at the suggestion, Kate or me. Cole was still smirking when he asked,
You bring back the big prize, along with my jerk-ass little brother?
I patted my pockets, feeling for the small plastic rectangle. I held it out to them, suddenly eager for someone other than me to carry its weight for a few minutes. Cole glanced at Kate.
All yours. You're still heading out soon, right?
In a minute. I need to tell my kids where I'm going.
Because they won't know what to do with themselves without Mommy fussing over them every 2 seconds.
At that, I really did wrench myself away from him, feeling my temper spike dangerously. Cole held up his hands and backed away a step.
Take a joke, Jim. Smile. Today's a good day, remember? Solid win.
Where are you going? I asked Kate. Out with a few agents to try to find some kind of transportation for all of us. But I'll be back in a few hours, I promise. I think you know that it probably wouldn't be right to stay here after this. Where are we going? I asked. Kansas or Georgia?
Roo!
It was impressive we'd been able to stand there for that long before Jude's radar started to ping. He was up and on his feet, pushing through the agents standing between us, nearly tripping over a group of kids who were clearly just trying to sit and eat and not burst into tears. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Chubbs and Liam turn around, but just as quickly, they were gone. And the only thing in my world was Jude, as he threw his long arms around me.
You scared the crap out of me, he said.
I hugged him back. My one kid welcoming committee. I was worried about you, too, I said. Did anything happen? He shook his head, curls flying.
Did you find him?
I told you she was fine.
Vida put a hand on his shoulder and tried to peel him off by force.
Judith, unclench.
Kate laughed, patting his back.
Come on, I have to tell you two and Nico something.
That was enough for Jude to ease up just a bit.
He still won't talk. I can't get him to say a word. He, like, shut down.
I gave a faint wave as she led him and Vida back over to Nico.
Ah, Cole muttered.
I felt him stiffen, adjusting his posture from a casual slump to one that was solid, collected. Even his face seemed to harden. He kicked off where he had been leaning against the wall and pushed past me without another word. He threw a single warning glance over his shoulder. That was less than what he gave Liam, and even less than what Liam gave him, as they brushed past each other and continued in opposite directions. I met Chubbs's look dead on, and the expression there was enough to tell me there'd be a story later.
Alive, 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 my heart sang.
I let the poisonous memory of what Clancy had shown me bleed out, until there was nothing but the buzzing brightness in my chest. It took my breath away.
Alive!
The dirt on their faces was nothing. The cut that had reopened on Liam's chin was nothing. The crack in one of Chubbs's lenses was nothing. They were everything. The two of them stood in front of me, arms crossed over their chests, wearing identical disapproving looks.
Are you guys okay?
I asked, since they clearly weren't about to say anything.
Are you? Liam shot back. What were you thinking, going after him like that?
I bristled at his tone. I was thinking that he let himself be dragged here for a reason, and I was right. I reached into my pocket, fishing out one of the photos from the folded stash of documents. Chubbs eyed the stained paper I held out with a measure of distaste.
That blood wasn't in your body at one point, was it?
I pressed it against his chest, forcing him to take it. I tracked him to Albin's office. That's what he was after. Liam leaned over to look. They didn't have the same mental block I did, apparently. Recognition lit up their eyes. Chubbs's jaw actually dropped. He's looking for her, I said,
The photos were in a file with what I think is research she was conducting. I don't know if he thought she was here or he knew Albin might have some kind of clue, but... Cole climbed up onto the table at the center of the room, clapping his hands twice. He cupped his hands around his mouth.
Can I get your attention?
There was a formality to his tone that sounded unnatural. The Cole of sly smiles and infuriating teasing had apparently retired for the morning. Agent Stewart had no time for him.
All right, I'll make this quick.
The agents and kids in the room were shifting, flowing around the cots and tables so they were standing in front of him.
What happened here? It's done. You did your part beautifully. And while I wish I could say they wouldn't have gone through with their plan in the end, I think we all know that'd be a damn lie.
Liam shifted, leaning back against the wall in the exact pose his brother had assumed a few minutes before. He kept his eyes focused on me, clearly waiting for something.
Look, I'm not one for pretty speeches. I'm not going to lie because you've been lied to all your goddamn lives, and it's got to stop. Here's what you need to know.
He cleared his throat.
When Albin started this whole thing, he only ever wanted to expose the truth about IAAN and for Gray to own up about the camps. More than anything, he wanted this country to go back to what it was before, the place he was proud of and was happy to serve. The Children's League was his dream, even if it turned to shit in the end. He wanted that life again. But I say we can't go back.
I turned more fully toward him, stepping around Chubbs to get a better look. The other kids watched, riveted. Why wouldn't they be? It was the same as all of those times I'd heard Liam speak about freeing the camps. The passion behind their words undercut all the doubt they claimed to have about their ability to express themselves. They let themselves burn when so many of us were afraid to be warmed by the fire. He's one of us, I thought. The others had no idea, and they still felt that this was right, that he was supposed to be taking charge. Liam scoffed, rolling his eyes. Chubbs and I glanced at each other, and I wondered if he could feel the wave after wave of disappointment Liam was sending our way, too.
It's forward or nowhere for us now. We, all the folks who came back, are leaving this place, and this name, behind. I don't know what we'll be yet or if we'll take another name, but I know what we're going to do. We're going to figure out what the hell happened to cause IAAN, expose anyone responsible, and get those poor damn kids out of those cesspools of misery. We are leaving. We are going up to the ranch. There are agents reopening it right now. We want you to come. We want you to want to fight. We want you.
Kate stood from where she'd been sitting with the others and gave me a wave as she exited through the door on the other side of the room. Vida, Jude, and Nico didn't look up as she left. They were nodding, letting Cole's promises sweep them up in the heady rush of possibility. I felt it fluttering inside me, too. There were no advisors feeding him lines, no locked filing cabinets, no dark hallways. This was honest. Real.
What's the ranch? Chubbs whispered.
It's the League's old temporary headquarters near Sacramento, I said. They shuttered it when they finished this one.
We want you, Cole repeated, his eyes sliding our way. But it's your choice.
I met his gaze dead on, trying not to roll my eyes as he winked. He knew he had me. And so did Liam. He shoved away from the wall, but he let me catch him by the jacket as he passed. His shoulders shook with each deep, ragged breath he drew in. After days of regaining his strength and coloring, Liam was back to looking a step away from collapsing. His skin was ashy and his eyes burning as he stared at me.
Tell me you're leaving with us today, Liam whispered. Chubbs and me. I know you're too smart to buy all that bullshit. I know you.
He saw the answer in my face. His hands captured my wrists and pushed them away. Just before Liam reached the door, he turned back and said, his voice hoarse,
Then I have nothing left to say to you.
Cole disappeared after his speech, muttering something about going to check on it, without giving another word of explanation to what or who it was. I had half the mind to follow him and make sure it wasn't Clancy Gray, but I'm not sure I could have stood up from the table if I had tried. The five of us, Jude, Vida, Chubbs, Nico, and I, had claimed one of the circular tables near a TV, mostly, I think, to stay out of the way of the agents who were trying to retire the building and strip anything and everything they might need from it. An hour had passed, more than enough time for Jude to ask, "Is Kate back yet?" and me to start worrying about Liam. It felt like the longer I sat there, though, the heavier my limbs became, until I was mimicking Nico across the table and resting my head on my arms, easing that weight off my shoulders. "She said it'd take a while," Vida said, checking the time on her old chatter again. "There's 70 of us. That's a lot of wheels to round up."
"We're coming to you live from the Texas State Capitol building, where President Gray and representatives from the Federal Coalition will start the Unity Summit in less than 15 minutes now."
Jude reached over to turn the volume up. He'd been the picture of calm all morning. There hadn't been so much as a whimper of how hungry or tired he was. Of our sad group, he was the only one who was actually paying attention to the screen. Nico had retreated so far in on himself, he was basically comatose. Chubbs kept glancing between the watch on his wrist and the door. The news coverage of the Christmas Day Peace Summit had started 15 minutes before at 9 o'clock Texas time. There were mostly crowd shots, and of that only a very small section. When the cameraman had accidentally panned over a group of protesters and their signs, all of which were being kept as far from the building as possible, the feed had been cut. Cole slid into the space between Jude and me, nearly knocking the kid off the bench.
"Hey, Jem? Need to borrow you for a sec."
I turned and buried my face deeper into my arms. "Can it wait?"
"It is awake and very angry, and I would appreciate some guidance on how to approach, seeing as you are the only one who might be able to tell me if he's trying to melt my brain."
"People know what he really is?" Chubbs asked, surprised.
"You told them?" "Alban already knew," Cole said. "He saw Clancy influencing one of his Secret Service agents during one of his press tour stops after he got out of camp."
I sat up at that. If Alban already knew what Clancy was and what he could do, Lillian Gray's first note could be taken a whole different way. I need to get out of his reach if I'm going to save him. Lillian might have realized, even before President Gray had, that her son was using his abilities to influence the people around him. The timeline was coming together for me finally. Alban would have seen Clancy do this just before he left to join the League. He removed himself from, as Lillian called it, Clancy's reach. If she had tried asking her husband or any one of his advisors for help disappearing, Clancy would have had access to that information. It really had been a plan of desperation.
"Then why the hell didn't he do anything with that?"
came Liam's voice behind us. The lines in his face deepened with his frown.
"That could have blown the whole camp charade apart."
Cole rolled his eyes.
"And he was going to prove it how. The kid was a ghost. We tried to put feelers out to see if he'd come willingly, but he never bit."
"Because he doesn't need you," Nico said, his voice hoarse. "He doesn't need any of us. He takes care of himself."
I opened my mouth to explain my theory, but Liam cut me off. "Shouldn't you be helping the others clean the place out?" he asked pointedly. He stared at the place where Cole's hand was on my shoulder. It was insane to see them standing side by side like this, wearing almost identical expressions of anger on almost identical faces.
"Feel free to leave any time, Lee," Cole said, dismissing him with a wave. "No one's keeping you here. I told you how to find Mom and Harry, so go on. Run back and hide." I wish I could be there when you explained to them how you almost managed to fuck over an entire group of kids because you're too idiotic to pay attention to what you're doing and where you're going. After you tell them about what happened when you tried to break out of your camp, of course. I heard Vida swear under her breath, slamming a hand down on Chubbs's arm to keep him from trying to jump in. There was no one there to check me. Stop it, I said. Listen to yourself. You! A flush of red swept up Liam's neck, and he was visibly struggling to keep his face in check. You have no idea. Oh, don't cry about it, Cole said, standing. Haven't you already embarrassed me enough? Just go. Jesus, just go already if you want out so damn bad. Stop wasting my time.
Guys?
Jude's voice went high, cracking on the word. Guys! Please. I tried again. Just... Jude leaned over the table and grabbed my arm, turning me back in the direction of the television. Shut up and look! President Gray had exited his car and was looking around at the crowds, lifting his hand in a well-practiced wave. His hair was grayer than I remembered it being even a few months ago. Heavier bags rimmed his dark eyes. But it was still Clancy's face, a glimpse of what he'd look like in 30 or 40 years. And for that alone, I wanted to look away.
What's...
Vida began, just as the camera panned to a small hooded figure shoving his way past the pretty blonde broadcaster, leaping over the police boundaries. The president was slowly making his way up the pristine white steps of the Capitol, his hand outstretched toward the governor. Behind him, both the American and Texas state flags were swaying with the breeze. He didn't seem to notice something was wrong until the men in suits beside him pulled their guns, and the governor's face went white as bone. The police officers that lined the steps were thrown to each side, shoved through the air with such force that they smashed through the lines of cameramen and photographers. He hadn't needed to touch them, only slash his arms out in front of him like he was throwing open a heavy curtain.
Christ, Liam said behind me. That's a kid.
He was slight, all lean muscles and tan skin, like a runner who'd spent his summer out on a high school track. His hair was long, tied back with a small elastic to keep it out of his face. It gave him a clear view as he swung the small gun up from his sweatshirt's pockets and calmly fired two shots into the president's chest. The TVs, each tuned to a different station, erupted at the exact same moment, catching the scene from every angle.
Oh my God! Oh my!
The newscaster was moaning. She dropped to the ground. All we could see was the back of her head as she watched the police and Secret Service pile on top of the kid, burying him under a sea of uniforms and coats. The crowd behind her was screaming. The camera shook as it swung around to capture their escape from the scene. Every look of terror, every look of disgust, all turned now from the president himself to the kid who'd just killed him.
Did you do this?
Liam snarled, swinging back toward his brother.
Did you order that kid to do that?
He's not one of us, Vida said. I've never seen that piece of shit in my life.
Cole spun on his heel, diving headlong into the stunned silence in the atrium. No one was moving aside for him, and I had no idea where he was going. Vida grabbed the remote and turned the volume up.
Ladies and gentlemen, please.
The broadcaster was still on the ground, trying to protect herself from the stampede of bystanders fleeing the scene. The picture cut away to the horrified faces of the anchors back in the studio, but they were there for only an instant before the screen clicked to black and bold words appeared there. Emergency alert system. The United States government has issued an emergency action notification. Do not turn off your TV at this time. Important information will follow. But the message stayed on the screens, and the only thing that did follow was the low wailing tones of the emergency alert system, the same ones we'd all heard 1,000 times as they'd run the tests on televisions and radios. There was a muffled bang that came from somewhere above us, almost inaudible under the sound of panicked voices in the atrium and the blaring television screens. Two of them. Three. four, all firing off in rapid succession like the crackling 4th of July fireworks we used to watch at home from my backyard. They were too far away to be truly frightening. For a moment, I wondered if they were fireworks. Were people really crass enough to already be celebrating President Gray's apparent demise? It all washed away with the overpowering sound of rushing water. No, more like static. A ferocious wave of noise, cracking, snapping, hissing, like a rolling hurricane. And then it all cut out, with a low, mechanical whine, the kind an animal might make as it took its last breath. The lights, the TVs, the air conditioning, everything switched off, throwing us back into the same impenetrable darkness we'd just left. If Jude hadn't still been gripping my arm, I would never have been able to catch him as he swayed toward the ground. "Whoa!" I began. Vida was instantly at our side, helping me lower him back into a seat.
Something just happened.
The agents around us were snapping on glow sticks, illuminating the room in that small way. I could see his hands clenched in his hair. The expression on his face was dazed, drunk almost.
Something bad.
What do you mean? I asked, letting Chubbs in closer to look. His eyes were still slightly unfocused.
It was a big burst, like a flare, and then it was gone. Everything is so quiet. Nothing's talking anymore.
I scanned the room, searching for the team of yellows. They were in the exact same dazed state, limp and unresponsive to the other kids' efforts to get them on their feet. I could see their faces in the faint, dying light of the glow sticks.
What the hell? I heard Chubbs say. Another rolling blackout?
I shushed him, trying to listen as an agent quickly ran down the situation for Cole as they made their way back over to us. Backup generator is still up and running. No cell or radio connections available. The cameras on the streets have shut off. Bennett is trying to get them restarted.
Don't bother, Cole said calmly. They're most likely fried.
Fried? But that would mean... It was too much of a coincidence for the power to have gone out at that moment. But what Cole was suggesting wasn't that someone had tampered with Los Angeles's power grid. He thought someone had disabled every single piece of electronic equipment throughout the city.
You think it was some kind of electromagnetic pulse?
Another agent pressed.
I think we better get our asses moving before we find out.
Cole cupped his hands around his mouth, shouting over the panicked whispering.
All right, I know you've drilled this. Take what you can carry from this room and go straight for the hole. Nothing else. Keep to your lines. Mandatory evac starts now.
Vida gathered Jude to her side, leaving me to haul Nico up from his seat.
It could just be another blackout, an agent protested. It can't have been in response to the assassination. Our best bet is to go down to level 3 and ride it out.
If this is an attack, another one put in, then the safest place for us to stay is here. The safest place for us is out of this...
There were three loud knocks, like someone was standing directly above us, politely asking to be let inside. I don't know why I did it, or what I even thought the noise was, but I tackled Nico to the ground, and a moment later felt Vida do the same with Jude beside me.
Cover!
Someone screamed, but the word disappeared in the white-hot flash of light. Then the world rained down fire over our heads. 31. I didn't feel the pain right away, only the heavy pressure against my spine. I woke in total darkness with Nico shouting my name, gripping my shoulders. There was a single blessed moment where my brain was in tatters, and it couldn't connect what I was seeing and smelling and feeling with the reality of what had just happened. Everything was filtered through darkness.
No, I have to find her first. Damn it, Liam, move! Cole roared. Go with the others. They're here, I heard Vida say. Help me with this!
The weight pinning me on top of Nico lifted, and smoky, dust-stained air flooded into my lungs. I coughed, my hand sliding across the floor until I found what felt like a glow stick. It wasn't. It was someone's finger, and it wasn't attached to his body. I was hauled up and onto my feet, held there until my knees solidified.
Everyone,
I started to say.
Bunker busters,
Vida said. We gotta go.
Dude, I'm here,
he said.
I can't see you, but I'm here.
Everyone's here. We're all okay. Chubbs cut in. Tell us where to go.
Down,
I coughed, clearing the thick dust coating my tongue and throat. My eyes were adjusting now, and I was realizing that the dull orange glow surrounding us wasn't from the glow sticks, but from the fires caused by the explosions. Everything else rushed at me with the force of a bullet to the head. Wires were hanging down from the partially collapsed roof, along with pieces of the roof itself. And the sound of distant thunder? It was still there, louder now, firing off on a driving beat.
They're bombing the city.
It didn't matter who they were, not then. I wiped at the slick rush of warmth running down my jaw, glancing over to make sure Nico was okay. He and Jude were huddled together, their arms wrapped around each other. I turned on my heel, counting them off as I went. Chubbs stood, watching the dark shapes of kids and agents limping out of the west exit of the room. Liam was trying to get back to us, shoving at Cole, who was trying to force him to line up behind the others. And Vida, she was staring at the still bodies strewn across the floor, some half buried where the ceiling had actually caved in. The whole room smelled like scorched meat and smoke. Sneakers and boots were scattered, thrown off bloodied, unmoving feet.
We can't leave them,
Jude cried, starting to reach toward Sarah, one of the blue girls. Sarah stared back up at him, her chest caved in by the scaffolding that had fallen on her.
It's not right. We can't leave them down here. Please.
We have to, I said. Come on. We'd run evacuation drills a total of 2 times since I'd been with the League, both using a different exit to leave HQ. One was out through the elevator and tunnel, the way we would have normally come in. The other was an enormous stairwell that twisted and curved its way up to the surface, a short distance away from the factory that was supposed to serve as our shield. Neither of them was an option now. I could see that just by looking at Cole's face.
Move, move, move!
He was telling us, shoving each kid and agent through the door.
Down to level 3. We're going out the way you came in. Follow Agent Kalb.
I tried to count the heads as they passed, but it was too dark and the smoke was too thick. The whole structure shook, throwing me forward toward Liam, who was waiting for us at the door.
Are you okay?
He asked in a rush of breath.
He grabbed me. I didn't want to go.
Cole took him by the collar and hauled him out into the hallway before us. It was clear they'd been aiming for the dead center of the building. We stumbled after, a line of us, trying to navigate through the concrete, flaming rubble, and the hissing, spitting steam pipes that had burst. Still, it was some small miracle it hadn't been damaged the way the atrium had. The stairwell down to level 2 was clogged with more smoke and steam. My shirt was drenched through with sweat. I started to strip my jacket off, automatically feeling for the flash drive that wasn't there.
Kate, I thought. Where's Kate? What's happening to Kate?
I was thrown forward into Liam's back with the next impact. One of the kids up ahead of us screamed, but all I could hear was Jude behind me whispering,
"Oh God, oh my God,"
over and over again. I don't know what he was picturing in his head. But if it was anything like my image of being crushed under 10 tons of cement and dirt, I was surprised he could even function at all, let alone keep moving forward. The line slowed as we rounded down to the 2nd level, clogging with some problem we couldn't see. I slipped around Liam and grabbed Cole's arm to get his attention.
What about the people in the infirmary?
If they couldn't get up and walk themselves out, we're not doing it for them,
Cole said with a note of finality.
What about Clancy?
I asked, though a part of me already knew the answer.
Did they let him out?
There was no time to clear the floor, Cole said.
I glanced back over my shoulder, wishing I could see Liam's face in the dark. I felt him, instead, hands on my waist, gently pushing me forward. Then his voice was in my ear saying,
"What would he do if it were you? Me?"
It didn't make it any easier to swallow the bile in my throat. It was one thing to bring a person in as a prisoner, and another to sentence him to what was very likely death.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Vida snarled as she and Chubbs gripped a panicking Nico and kept him going. I could see Jude's pale face behind them, looking on in horror.
I'll get him, Nico said. I can get him.
No,
Jude cried.
We have to stay together.
The aftershock of the next explosion tossed us all to our knees. I smacked my head against the wall, spots bursting in front of my eyes. I hauled myself up, and then we were all running down the steps, through the dark hall, jumping down into the interrogation block. Sections of the wall to my right were already partly collapsed.
Stay right behind me, Cole said, glancing back at us. Come on, we need to be at the front.
He was able to edge his way up through the line, but everyone was bottlenecking as they reached the door to the tunnel. I could only imagine what the response would have been if the six of us tried to cut to the front of the line and follow him. We were finally close enough to see what the problem was. On the other side of the door, each kid and agent had to carefully climb over the pipes and cement that had been shaken free from the tunnel's ceiling. My blood was beating hard inside of my head, but my limbs felt hollow with panic as we waited and waited and waited for it to be our turn. Liam was bouncing on the balls of his feet like he was gearing up to bolt forward at any moment. Once we were at the door, I stopped and stepped aside to let the others go in front of me, but Liam was having none of it. He all but lifted me up and over the debris, then climbed over himself, his body the wall that kept me from turning back. I heard Vida curse behind me and Chubbs's labored grunt. The tunnel felt hot and humid with so many bodies crammed into it. The blast from above had collapsed sections of it, slowing our progress again and turning what had been a simple path into an obstacle course. I felt the thundering vibrations before the sound of the crashes actually reached my ears. It was a series of four low bangs, each louder and worse than the next. Vida shouted something up to us I couldn't hear over the vicious wave of noise that followed. My stomach, my heart, everything inside of me seemed to drop, like the tunnel had given out under me. The seconds passed at half their speed, giving me just enough time to turn away from the explosion that blew out through the door we'd just come through. We threw ourselves to the ground as a blast of gray dust and chunks of cement and glass came shooting out of the doorway. The tunnel shook so hard, I was convinced it would cave in. The kids, the agents, everyone was shouting now, but I heard Cole's voice amplified over everyone's. Move! 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 But I couldn't. I was only able to push myself up onto my knees, drag myself up using the wall. I could hear Vida and Chubbs talking, complaining about the dark, how they couldn't see each other.
That was HQ, I whispered. Did it collapse?
I think so, Liam said. The tunnel back in is totally blocked off now, Chubbs called up, coughing.
The kids in front of us passed the news up through the line of people ahead of them. We heard the shock and tear-stained responses all the way from the back of the herd. Those agents, the kids, their bodies that we had to leave behind, whose families would never know what happened to them, who didn't get a chance to escape, who might have still been clinging to life when... The sob stuck in my throat, and I couldn't cough it free. I wasn't crying, but my body was shaking violently, hard enough that Liam wrapped his arms around me from behind. I felt his heart racing against my back, his face as he buried it against my neck. He was solid, and here, all of us, alive. 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 We had made it out. But still, I couldn't stop seeing it, the way the ceiling must have caved. The falling glass, the floor that suddenly wasn't there, the darkness sweeping down. Focus, I commanded myself. There are still kids behind you. You're still not out of this. Don't let it take you, too. Liam, Chubbs, Vida, and Jude. Liam, Chubbs, Vida, and Jude.
Just breathe. Just breathe,
Liam said, his own voice shaking. The steady pattern of it,
The rise and fall of his chest beside me was steadying enough that my grip on his side relaxed. He pressed his lips against my forehead, more out of relief than anything else, I thought.
"We're okay," I said. "We're okay. Just keep going."
My mind caught the words and carried them forward in the dark. Just keep going. The longer we walked, the harder it became to tell the difference between my fear, my anger, and my guilt. They were a swollen mass in my chest, a rising sore. Someone ahead of us was either laughing or sobbing. The noise was so unhinged, I couldn't tell the difference. The biggest fear, the one that kept my heart firmly lodged at the base of my throat and my knees sliding forward, forward, forward as the cement gripped at my shoulders, was knowing that, at any point, the whole thing could come down on top of us. Breathe. It should have been comforting to feel Liam pressing close behind me. We finally reached a section of the tunnel that was whole, and where we could stand at our full height. It felt better to be moving that way, like it was a sign we were almost through. But it was still so impossibly dark. No matter how many times I tried to look back, I couldn't see anything past the vague shape of Liam's face. Keep going. Head down, arms in, only going forward. Forward. Forward, as fast as I could move my feet. I lost track of time. 5 minutes passed. 10 minutes, maybe. 15. The mildew smell changed to an all-out rancid stink as the drains constricted again. I kept my hands out on either side of me, letting them glide along the slick, dripping cement. Liam let out a strangled grunt as he cracked his head against the sloping ceiling, and a second later I had to duck. The standing water was thick and reeked of rotting things and mold. I heard someone start to retch, and it was like it always was. Once one person started, everyone else's stomach was heaving, too. I clawed blindly at my face, trying to clear the hair that stuck in clumps to my cheeks and neck. It snuck up on me, the suffocating. The thick, sticky air seemed to vanish, the tunnels constricted, and I couldn't see a thing, not one damn thing. We are not going to die down here. We were not just going to disappear. I tried to stay focused on the rhythmic, slow shuffle of skin against concrete and the way the water seemed to recede with the ceilings. How was it possible that the tunnel felt so different heading out than it had coming in? I felt it widen again, dipping down. It might have been my eyes adjusting to the dark, but I could have sworn it was getting lighter. I wasn't imagining it. The change had been gradual at first, a hint of a glow. But it was bright enough now that I could see Liam's surprised face as it turned down to meet mine. The tunnel filled with sounds of relief. I stood on my toes, trying to see over the heads in front of me. The smallest pinprick of light was staring us down the long tunnel, and it grew just that tiny bit larger with each step. A sudden burst of energy kicked my legs up, moving them faster and faster and faster until I could see the ladder. The figures climbing up out of the crippling dark and into the light. For a long time, there was nothing beyond the smoke. It hung around us in a curtain of graying brown, warmed only by the setting sun. The debris that had been blasted in the bombing still hadn't settled. It floated down through the open door, a fine, crushed cement that swirled as we stirred it. My arms shook the entire climb up the ladder. Cole was waiting for us at the entrance to the tunnel, gripping my arm and hauling me out before turning back to get Liam.
"God damn it, you stupid kid!"
he cried, shaking him. His voice was hoarse and he seemed to choke on each word.
"You scared the shit out of me. When I say stay behind me, I mean stay behind. Why didn't you just leave when I told you to? Why can't you just listen to me?"
He wrapped his arms around his shoulders, and Liam, in all his relief and exhaustion, let him. I couldn't understand what they were saying to each other as they stood in front of the door, but Vida's,
"Some of us are still trying to get out, assholes,"
shattered the moment. Another agent guided us down the embankment of the Los Angeles River to the spot where the others were huddled beneath the center of the bridge overhead. I pulled my shirt up over my nose and mouth to avoid breathing it in,
but the chalky taste was already in my throat. I had already swallowed the day's poison down, letting it mix with the smoke and bile. The sights of Los Angeles and the warehouse district were too much for any of us to take. No one was willing to turn around and face the wreckage in the distance. We knew, all of us, that the city had been attacked, but to actually see the burning skyscrapers on the horizon, watch the black smoke funnel out and up and into the clear blue sky, was sickening. Liam and I sat down a small ways from the other kids, who were crying and hugging one another. It was enough for me that he was sitting next to me, that his shoulder was pressed against mine. I watched them, the tears streaming down their faces, and I wished I could have let myself break down too, to clear out the twisting mass of terror still churning inside me. But out here, my exhaustion numbed me. The sight of the everyday objects scattered nearby in the river quieted the thoughts racing through my head. The dust covered cars in inches, the ground in feet. It gave way under us like playground sand. We were miles from downtown, but we were finding papers, an office chair, sunglasses, briefcases, and shoes that had been dropped and forgotten or blown out from nearby demolished buildings. The airstrike had left one Wilshire, the old skyscraper that housed the Federal Coalition, a burning black husk. I had seen it, just for a second, belching out rolling streams of smoke, turning entire city blocks dark. And all Liam could say, over and over, was, "Damn." I took a deep, steadying breath. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Jude standing out from under the bridge, his eyes closed, his face turned up to the patch of sun that had broken through the smoke. I couldn't bring myself to stand, but I pretended I was there too, tilting my head back, letting the warmth dry the sticky, wet clumps of my hair, letting it burn away the taste of fear on my tongue, pretending we were somewhere far away from here. Liam stood as Chubbs and Vida came toward us, their dark skin plastered with silvery dust. He hooked an arm around his friend's neck, guiding him over to where I was waiting. "We heard Cole talking to some of the other agents who got out of the tunnel first. They said every car and every phone they found was dead. Cole thinks it really was some kind of electromagnetic pulse. We just couldn't tell because we were so far underground." That was one of the reasons Alban had insisted on building it so deep into the earth,